I did sign the guest register. My name is Zimmerman with a Z. Hearing the announcements, especially concerning the seminar next Sabbath, last time I was with you, a seminar was in progress on that weekend in Trinidad and then on Tobago on Sunday. And I could bring you a small, interesting report about those two. We had 30 people respond to our request to come to one of three seminars we're having in Trinidad. We broke it up into three different groups because our hall is small and the number of Good News receivers, recipients is very large. And so that was the second mailing. And we have a congregation there of just about 30, and we had 30 responses. Then that day, a torrential rain occurred, and we had almost nobody show up because it was such a powerful rainstorm. But four people did show up. And so the congregation there is now enjoying two of them in regular attendance. The next day, Sunday, we had a seminar over on Tobago where we only have 59 Good News receivers, recipients. Of those 59, we weren't sure what would happen. We had set 3 o'clock as a time for the lecture. At 3:15, no one had shown up except for our one lone member on Tobago. And three people that had come from Trinidad to kind of bolster the congregation. But at 3:20, the four that we had there were met by four other people that did come. And so out of those four, now there are two that are attending with us regularly in Tobago. So the congregation grew 50%. And our member on Tobago, and that is the island where we'll be holding the Feast of Tabernacles. It's a very more peaceful and tranquil island than Trinidad. Had an idea. She's an accountant, bookkeeper, and a very good one, frankly, from what I've seen. And she says, you know, we've still got 59. Why don't we have another one? And we explained to Anne, we can't do it again. She says, well, what if we just invite them to the Feast of Tabernacles? And we said, well, we can do that. So we're sending a letter to 59 people on Tobago, inviting them to come to the Feast of Tabernacles, where our feast site is about 50 strong, 50 or 60 strong. And maybe we'll double the feast site overnight. Who knows? We are looking forward to good times there. So I could bring you a little update what's happening there. 2 weeks ago, we were in Miami for the Sabbath with the congregation there and had a delightful time with the members. Last week, we were in Fellsmere, and we met there in a hall as part of a church, a Christian church there. We use their fellowship hall, I guess it's called. It's an older church, but it has everything that you need, including air conditioning. So that went very well. And those people, there were 30 in attendance, very much are looking for continued service from our congregation. We do a lot to help them out. We send a team over there every month. They would like us to be able to take care of them weekly. So I don't know if we can do that, but I'm putting the paper or pen to paper and seeing what we might be able to organize. And maybe we could do something every other week and hook them up with a telecast at other times. So it seems that they're stabilizing somewhat, and it's good that we can continue to serve them. But here we are today. I was over in St. Petersburg this morning. I'm with you this afternoon. And the newest prophetic times that is available from a fellow elder and a very good friend, Jim Tuck, has this on the page one at the bottom. The headline, Exterminate Christians, Close Pyramids and the Sphinx. August 30th, 2011, just a few days ago. WorldNetDaily.com reports a rising leader in the radical Islamic movement in Egypt that has become a major political player since the demise of Mubarak's regime says Christian churches may need to be blown up and Christians exterminated to allow the advance of Islamic law or Sharia. The comments come from Sheikh Adel Shihato, a senior leader with the Egyptian Islamic Jihad terrorist group. The Sheikh was jailed in 1991 because of his positions, but was released earlier this year in the revolution that removed Mubarak from power. The Sheikh, a senior jihadist, responded to a question about using violence against Christians who make up a substantial minority in Egypt. Are you going to blow up churches? The newspaper interviewer asked Shahato. Yes and no, he replied. The Christian is free to worship his God in his church. But if the Christians make problems for the Muslims, I will exterminate them. I am guided by the Sharia, and it stipulates that they must pay the tax while in a state of humiliation. These positions of yours frighten us as Egyptians, the interviewer said. I will not act in ways that contradict my faith just in order to please the people. We say to Christians, convert to Islam or pay the jihad tax. Otherwise, we will fight you. The Sharia is not based on logic, but on divine law. That is why we oppose universal, man-made constitutions. We live in troubling times. This week, you'll find articles on your newspaper saying you must be careful about your activities. You'll find articles saying you should not be too overly concerned and worried about your activities. Because of the activities 10 years ago on September 9, 2001. 9/11's anniversary is coming very soon. Those events 10 years ago were an act of war by non-sovereign people who are bound together by religion. Fewer than 20 men gained the attention of the world using jet airplanes. Architectural models, centers of commerce, and government were attacked and destroyed in our own land just 10 years ago. And the jihadist that modeled that event still has not been brought to justice or trial. Our government is weak. We as a nation have seen failure. And in the activities that we see in our own midst, we see sometimes confusion in our states. Muslims, the people who are numbered by their religion, represent 1/6 of the world's population. 1 in 6 people on the face of the earth is a Muslim. Not all Muslims are militant. Not all are extremists. But we must not avoid what we see as the markers that are going on around us. We must not dismiss them. We know that biblical prophetical models say religious and political war is ahead. The outcome will be total destruction unless the Almighty steps in, and He prophesies that He will. But there's going to come a time in the very near future where we're going to be seeing the total devastation of our land. If you spend some time in Daniel 11, you'll find about the king of the north and the king of the south. The material I have for this subject is more than I can cover in one sermon, so I'll save those comments and some other matters for another time. But these events are prophesied, and I think in a view towards the future, it is important that we review the past, that we know what has happened for decades, for millennia. And so today I want you to study with me in the Bible the topic of pagan moon worship. There are many illustrations of what God's people should do with anything that is inferior to the godly way. We're often challenged, whether it's in matters in all matters, whether it's education, finance, religion, we're always challenged to choose the high road and stay with like kind, to stay within our midst and to fashion our ways after the ways of God, and not to depart into some other way. So I want to spend some time with you looking at what the Bible says about moon worship. Now, as a people, we've spent some time understanding in the past matters concerning sun worship, and that will occur in some of our research today. But I think moon worship, which is the focal, chief, binding element of the Muslim world, is something we are not all totally appraised of. You know of the representation with a crescent moon and a single star. And as the next opportunity provides itself for me to go into this further, I'll show you some examples from archaeology that will show you that this is not a matter that was finally set upon in 600 to 700 AD, just a few centuries ago, but indeed has been part of the system of mankind for millennia. So I have 6 points to give to you today in this sermon. The 6 points will work together. The first one, and all of them very simple, are covered by the title of the sermon, The Moon, Instruction or Worship. The moon, instruction or worship. First, what does the Bible say about the moon? What does the Bible say about the moon? In Numbers chapter 10, verse 10, there are a few that work well together, and I've picked a handful of them. Numbers 10:10. In the day of your solemn gladness, and in your solemn days, and in the beginning of your months, you shall blow with the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings, that they may be to you for a memorial before our God. I am the Lord your God. Now the subject of moon isn't as a distinct word there, but that is how a month is calculated, by the moving of the moon. And so what the Bible does say about the moon is you'll use it to calculate your months. Now this has been a learning experience for me in a personal way. My wife enjoys the sea. And every time we've been around the sea, she is very concerned, wanting to know what the tide is doing, so she can go out to the seashore and collect specimens. And she does this, and she has then to know. So she is one that will take knowledge and buy charts, look on the internet, and see what the tide charts are doing. And the tide charts tell you what is high tide and low tide. And the waters then of the earth move around the earth because of what the moon does. And it's kind of interesting when you stop and think about it, that that sphere that circles up there moves all of this water. When they say that, what is it, 7/8 of the surface or 9/10 of the surface of the earth is water, and that moon moves it around the whole globe. Now, the new moon, or the moon, did not replace God. You see here in this verse that it was something to be considered, but it wasn't taking the place of the designer. It pointed to God's design and creation. The moon was used to point mankind to the divine revealer of all truth. Here in Numbers 10, we now move to Numbers 28. And these offerings that are mentioned, helped a people to understand the difference between right and wrong, but also to calculate time. And in this calculation, you see in verse 11, Numbers 28:11, "And in the beginning of your months you shall offer a burnt offering unto the Lord, two young bullocks, and one ram, seven lambs of the first year without spot." Separate subject, but just to make a clear statement, Christ is the sacrifice for us now. We do not worry of these sacrifices. Christ has become our sacrifice. And then there's some itemizing of ingredients for different kinds of offerings here. And it uses the ephah as a unit of measure. An ephah is about 8 quarts. Or if you had 2 gallon jugs of water up here, that would be an ephah. Now, in an ephah, you can divide that up into different units, and it mentions it as tenths of deals here, tenths of an ephah, and so they would measure it in 10% values, and one tenth of an ephah was about 3 cups. Hey, this isn't important, but I know it, so I got to tell you. So you'd have that. Now the hin is about 1/2 gallon, so that would be 25% of an ephah, or 1/4 of an ephah. Now hin is spelled H-I-N, and I tried it this morning, it didn't go over at all, but I've got a little joke about a hin. A hin, a measurement here of an ephah, is about 1/2 gallon. A hen, H-E-N, is about 1/3 of a gallon, if you can cram her in there. A little over 2 quarts. Okay, 28:11. It's the beginning of your months. A burnt offering to the Lord. You don't make these sacrifices to the moon or to the sun or to any heavenly body. The sacrifices are to the Lord. The moon and counting your months is something you do to calculate time. So the Bible does talk about the moon. And it goes on to say, about 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour as a grain offering mixed with oil for each bull, 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour as a grain offering mixed with oil for one ram, 1/10 of an ephah of the fine flour mixed with oil as a grain offering for each lamb and as a burnt offering of sweet aroma, an offering made by fire to the Lord. Their drink offering shall be 1/2 a hin of wine for a bull, 1/3 of a hin for a ram, and 1/4 of a hin for a lamb. This is the burnt offerings of each month. So we're talking about measuring time. That's why the moon is there throughout the months of the year. Also, 1 kid of the goats as a sin offering to the Lord shall be offered, besides the regular burnt offering and its drink offering. The note in verse 11, and hopefully you can see it so clearly, makes it obvious that the offerings were not to the moon, but were in fact the beginning of the month, but the offerings were directed to God. Now, I want to give you then 3 scriptures that point us to this fact, first going to 1 Chronicles 23. Let me just read to you verse 31. And to offer all burnt sacrifices unto the Lord in the Sabbaths, in the new moons, and on the set feasts, by number, according to the order commanded unto them continually before the Lord. So, emphasizing then, using this first of two other scriptures, three total, telling us that the reason that you're marking time with the moon is simply that. It isn't becoming a matter of religion, that you then focus on it and you worship the moon. In the next book, 2 Chronicles 31, verse 3. He appointed also the king's portion of his substance for the burnt offerings, to wit, for the morning and evening burnt offerings, and the burnt offerings for the Sabbaths and for the new moons, and for the set feasts, as is written in the law of the Lord. So the Eternal's law told them to mark time and to do various sacrifices, so that those days then stood out, and they were then to revolve around in their mind that they were certainly not to be a people of sin. Next we go to Ezra chapter 3, just the next book over or so. Ezra 3 in the first six verses. And when the seventh month was come, and how did they know that? Because of seven new moons, the children of Israel were in the cities, the people gathered themselves together as one man to Jerusalem. Then stood up Jeshua, the priest, and the lineage is then mentioned, and built the altar of the God of Israel to offer burnt offerings thereon, as it is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. And they set the altar upon its basis, for fear was upon them, upon the people of those countries, and they offered burnt offerings thereon unto the Lord, every burnt offering morning and evening. They kept also the Feast of Tabernacles, as it was written, and offered the daily burnt offerings by number, according to the custom, as the duty of the eve every day required. And afterward offered the continual burnt offering, both of the new moons and of all the set feasts of the Lord that were consecrated, and everyone that willingly offered a freewill offering unto the Lord. From the first day of the seventh month began they to offer burnt offerings unto the Lord, but the foundation of the temple of the Lord was not yet laid. So they were making their offerings, and calculation of those times was by observing of the new moon and counting then when a new moon would come. Of some possible importance down the way is the last phrase there in verse 6, where it says the foundation of the house of the Lord was not yet laid. This indicates to us that you do not have to have a temple in Jerusalem to make a sacrifice. Every so often in the news, there's somebody beating the bandwagon that the Jews are building their temple in Jerusalem so they can do their sacrifices. Well, those of the Hebrew faith know that they don't have to have a temple or even a foundation of a temple to do a sacrifice, because of this routine that was followed here, it becomes an example to them, so they can sacrifice then as they will if they choose to do so. So that becomes our first point that we consider. What does the Bible say about the moon? Well, it says what you should do with the moon is use it in calculation of times. The second point that I have for you, worship of the sun, moon, and stars was strictly forbidden. This was nothing to be challenging God on at all, as we'll see it when we go through other portions of this sermon. Worship of the sun, moon, and stars was strictly forbidden. We clearly note that the Old Testament consistently rebuked the worship of the moon god. When Israel fell into idolatry, it was usually the cult of the sun god or of the moon god. And again, as a people, we've tended to, because of the Protestant leanings and their research, to lean upon the authority of recognizing that you don't follow worship of the sun. And that is true and correct. But we also are warned in God's word not to follow worship of the moon. We see in Deuteronomy chapter 4, Deuteronomy 4, we'll look at 13 through 20. So in 12 it says that he spoke out of the fire. They heard the voice of the words, but they didn't see the similitude, only they heard the voice. He declared unto you his covenant which he commanded you to perform, even 10 commandments, and he wrote upon 2 tables of stone. So the 10 commandments are mentioned as the directive from God that tells us what we should do. It is his instruction manual. And the Lord commanded me at the time of teaching you statutes and judgments, that you might do them in the land that you go over to possess it. Take you therefore good heed unto yourselves, for you saw no manner of similitude on that day that he spoke to you out of Horeb, out of the midst of the fire. They didn't see him, they heard him. And he's mentioning these things in the reference to the fact, okay, now you're going to be crossing the Jordan River, and I'm giving you instruction to go circle Jericho. And after 7 days, on the seventh day, you'll do it 7 times. The walls will fall flat, and you go in and kill everyone. That was the instruction. I gave a sermon on this some little time back. Now, when that was to be followed through, as you go on, and I think it's chapter 6 and 7 of Joshua, you find that there was a man named Achan. And Achan did not do by that honorably. He took some stuff and buried it in his tent floor. And because of that, his family and many others around him then were cursed and died. So after that, then they go to the town of Ai. And there's a conquest there that we'll read about today as well. But he's referencing then to the time when they crossed the Jordan and all these directions were given to them. He's told them then in 16, you follow the commandments, lest you corrupt yourselves and make you a graven image in the similitude of any figure, the likeness of male or female. So he says, you didn't see me, so you can't copy me. The likeness of any beast that is in the earth, the likeness of any winged fowl that flies in the air, the likeness of any creeping thing on the ground, the likeness of any fish that is in the waters beneath the earth. He says, don't do that. But what do we have today? People symbolizing their Christian way with the sign of a fish. And it says right here, don't do that. Mentions it specifically. 19, lest you lift up your eyes unto heaven, and when you see the sun, the moon, and the stars, even all the host of heaven, you should be driven to worship them. So there is this clearness here from God, do not worship the sun, moon, or stars. It was strictly forbidden. Don't serve them which the Lord your God has divided unto all nations under the whole earth. The heavenly host are there for all people to understand and use, but not to worship. But the Lord has taken you and brought you forth out of the iron furnace, out of slavery, even out of Egypt, to be unto him a people of inheritance, as you are this day. So it's remarkable that sun and moon are mentioned. And again, our heritage has been to focus on sun worshipers, the Babylonian system, which is replete in our Western society. moon worship basically is something in the Middle and Eastern cultures, and I don't think that we have really considered it as equally horrific before the throne of God as is sun worship. Over in Deuteronomy chapter 17, moving a few pages ahead in this book, Deuteronomy 17, verses 2, 3, 4, and 5, if there be found among you within any of your gates, which the Lord your God gives you, a man or a woman that has worked wickedness in the sight of the Lord your God in transgressing his covenant, and has gone and served other gods and worshipped them, either the sun or moon or any of the host of heaven, which I have not commanded. I said, don't do that. If it's told you and you hear about it and then you inquire diligently, and behold, you find that it's right, it's truthful, and that the thing is certain that such abomination is being done in Israel, you shall bring forth that man or that woman which has committed that wicked thing unto the gates, and that man or that woman you shall stone them with stones till they die. So the instruction and why it's strictly forbidden is very clear. It's going to take your life. So it's important for us to realize this. This, if we serve or find the service of the sun or the moon, that this is not representative of God's true way. And I hope you could see that the death by stoning shown God's view of this paganism. Now, evil King Manasseh reestablished pagan worship of all these celestial bodies, and we see in record of that in 2 Kings chapter 21, the first five verses. Manasseh was 12 when he began to reign. He reigned 55 years, so he did that until he was 62. He reigned in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Hephzibah. He did that which was evil in the sight of the Lord, after the abominations of the heathen, whom the Lord cast out before the children of Israel. For he built up again the high places which Hezekiah his father had destroyed. And he reared up altars for Baal, and made a grove, as did Ahab, king of Israel, and worshipped all the host of heaven and served them. I'm continually impressed with how long does it take it for a generation to forget the ways of God. It only takes one generation. So you parents, teach your children the ways of God, the faithfulness to those ways. This one built altars in the house of the Lord, verse 4, which the Lord said is in Jerusalem, I will put my name there. He built altars for all the hosts of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. And he made his son pass through the fire. He sacrificed his son in a burning fire. He observed times, used enchantments. He dealt with familiar spirits and wizards. He worked much wickedness in the sight of the Lord to provoke him, provoking the Lord to anger. Excuse me. Scriptures like this tell us why we don't read palms. They tell us why we don't involve ourselves with fortune-telling, why we don't get involved with tarot cards, why we leave all of that mystic system alone. It is not godly. It will provoke God to anger. So we see Manasseh reestablishing these things, and this building altars to all the host of heaven is one of the things that clearly angered our great God. Now, just a couple pages forward to 2 Kings 23, we see that his grandson, Josiah, when he became king, rectified this wrongful worship. 23 verse 4. And the king commanded Hilkiah, the high priest, and the priests of the second order, and the keepers of the door. Some might ask about the second order. The priesthood were divided up into different groups or courses, because there were too many of them all to serve at once, so they were divided up into groups, and they would serve in their course. And this would then in the second course, and the keepers of the door, he got them involved with cleaning up the temple of the vessels that were made for Baal and for the grove and for all the hosts of heaven. He burned them without Jerusalem in the fields of Kidron. He carried the ashes to Bethel. He put down the idolatrous priests whom the king of Judah had ordained to burn incense in the high places in the city of Judah and in the places round about Jerusalem. Them also they burned the incense unto Baal to the sun and to the moon and to the planets and to all the host of heaven. And so talking then apparently of even those things concerning the zodiac. And he brought out of the grove from the house of the Lord without Jerusalem to the brook Kidron and burned it in the brook Kidron, stamped it small to powder and cast the powder thereof upon the graves of the children of the people. So in this remarkable time he brings about all of this. So we see that worship of the sun, moon, and stars was strictly forbidden. And we find remark about those who changed from that, preserved for us so we can have then an example of what to do. So we'll go down to point three. Instructions from God encouraged Israel to avoid sun and moon worship. God gave instructions that we should avoid sun and moon worship. Over in Jeremiah chapter 8, Jeremiah 8, verse 1, and the first three verses. And at that time, says the Lord, they shall bring out of the bones of the kings of Judah, the bones of the princes, of the priests, the bones of the prophets, of the inhabitants of Jerusalem. He's going to bring all the bones out of their graves. And I want you to spread them on the land before the sun and the moon and all the host of heaven. Put them out there in the field. These are the ones you loved. These are the ones that you served. These are the ones that you followed and walked after, that you sought after, and those are the ones that you've worshipped. He says, now there they are. All their bones are out there in the field. Don't gather them together. Don't bury them. See if life will come back to them. That's the whole point of putting them out there, to see if they're going to come back to life. Because they pray to the heavens, to the sun, and to the moon, and to the stars, as if they could do something. But he's saying, challenging them, saying, no, nothing's going to bring them back to life. They shall be for dung upon the face of the earth. Just so much fertilizer. And death shall be chosen rather than life by all the residue of them that remain of this evil family, which remain in all the places where I have driven them, says the Lord of hosts. So he says, expose their bones to the sun, to the moon. See if they come back to life. See if it doesn't do some good and they're regenerated. God used his created sun and the moon that he established in the same battle in Joshua chapter 10. And if you really think about it, after some of these things that you read and putting other thoughts together that you'll see by the end today, God was really toying with their worship These enemies practiced ways of worship where the sun and the moon were very important. And when Joshua was fighting the battle, God had the signs of heaven work to the favor of his people. Look over in Joshua 10. Now it came to pass when Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had taken Ai and had utterly destroyed it and had done to Jericho and its king, so he had done to Ai and its king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them, that they feared greatly because Gibeon was a great city, one of the royal cities, and because it was great, greater than Ai, and all the men thereof were mighty. So these five kings, it mentions them by name and location, moving to chapter verse 5, these five kings of the Amorites decided they needed to do something about it, and they were going to make war. So the men of Gibeon, verse 6, sent unto Joshua to the camp and to Gilgal, saying, "Slack not your hand for your servant's sake. Come upon up to us quickly. Save us, because the kings of the Amorites, they've all joined together, the city-states that dwell in the mountains, they've gathered together against us." So Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all his people of war, and with him and all the mighty men of valor. And the Lord said, "Fear not, Joshua, for I have delivered them into your hand. There shall not a man of you stand before you." So Joshua therefore came unto them suddenly. He quickly went up from Gilgal at night, and the Lord discomforted them before Israel, and slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, and chased them along the way that goes up to Beth-horon. Came to pass as they fled before Israel, going down to Beth-horon, that the Lord cast down great stones from heaven, and they died, and they were more which died with hailstones than that the Israelites slew with the sword. Then spoke Joshua to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the children of Israel, and he said to in the sight of Israel, "Sun, stand still upon Gibeon, and you, moon, in the valley of Ajalon." I don't know if you've noticed that before. Not only did the sun stand still, but the moon did too. Now this is important when you get to looking at all these things, that God was using what they worshipped against them. So the sun stood still and the moon stayed until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Isn't this written in the book of Jasher? So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven and hastened not to go down about a whole day. And there was no day like that before it or after it. The Lord hearkened unto the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. What irony, what sarcasm, that they worship this way of the moon and the sun, and they don't come to help them. In fact, they're defeated by them. Excuse me. I've got three quotes I want to give to you from resources I've copied into my notes here. In just a moment, I want to talk to you about how Job talks about throwing kisses to the sun and the moon. But before I do that, I want to read you what that kind of behavior is called in history, and so it is recorded. The Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown commentary says that there was a pagan worship called Sabaism, S-A-B-A-I-S-N, S-A-B-A-I-S-M. Our Sunday and Monday, or Moon Day, are markers of Sabaism. So they worship Sunday and Monday. They worship the sun and the moon. And of course, there's a people that worships on Friday. You do know that. And between Friday, Sunday, and Monday, there's a people that worships the true God. Sabbath keepers, you and I. Just as you heard in the sermonette, we're going to stand out like a sore thumb. Banged and all red and bloody and bandaged. They'll know who we are. Because we don't keep Friday, we don't keep Sunday. We're right in between. The Probit Online Encyclopedia says, Sabaism is the worship of the stars or spirits in the stars. Sabaism was practiced in ancient Arabia and Mesopotamia. The Thesaurus explains that Sabaism is the same as Sabianism. The doctrine of the Sabians, the Sabian religion, which is a species of idolatry which consists in worshiping the sun, moon, and stars. And so, we're looking at this point three. We're to avoid sun and moon worship. And what I've tried to show you then, that historically, for millennia, those that did such things were called Sabians in history books. There isn't a terrible amount written about them, but there is evidence of it. Now let's read in Job 31, just before the book of Psalms, is Job. Job 31, verses 23 to 28. For destruction from God was a terror to me, and by reason of his brightness I could not endure. If I have made gold my hope and have said to the fine gold, you are my confidence, if I rejoiced because my wealth was great and because my eye had gotten much, if I beheld the sun when it shined, or the moon walking in brightness, and my heart had been secretly enticed by them, or my mouth had kissed my hand, this also were an iniquity to be punished by the judge, for I should have denied the God that is above. So, throwing a kiss to the sun and the moon is what they had done and would do. And Job writes about it and says, if you do that, you're marking yourself as not following the true God. So we need to be sure that we understand the instructions were to avoid sun and moon worship. Point four, what does research tell us? There is an official China visitors website called ChinaVista.com. And if you go there, you find interesting things, and you can book a trip and all kinds of cool things like that. But there is the some of their celebrations are mentioned, and they do have in China the Moon Festival. Now the Moon Festival is going to be this year, September 12, 2011. I'll quote four paragraphs from the China Vista website. Took off of it this week. On the 15th day of the 8th month, does that sound familiar? 15th day of the 8th month. Where have I heard that before? Of the lunar calendar, the moon is round, and the Chinese people mark this moon or mid-autumn festival. The round shape to a Chinese means family reunion. Therefore, the Moon Festival is a holiday for members of a family to get together wherever it is possible. On that day, sons and daughters will bring their family's members together back to their parents' house for a reunion. Sometimes people who have already settled overseas will come back to visit their parents on that day. Every Chinese holiday is accomplished by some sort, or accompanied by some sort of special food. On the Moon Festival, people eat moon cakes, a kind of cookie which is filled of sugar, fat, sesame, walnut, the yolk of preserved eggs, ham, or other material. In Chinese fairy tales, there lives on the moon the fairy Chang Yi, also a woodcutter named Wu Gang, and a jade rabbit, which is Chang Yi's pet. In the old days, people paid much respect to the fairy Chang Yi and her pet, the jade rabbit. The custom of paying homage to the fairy and rabbit is gone, but the mooncakes are showing improvement every year. There are hundreds of varieties. They're on sale the month before the arrival of the moon festival this year. Some mooncakes are very high quality and very delicious. An overseas tourist is advised not to miss it if she happens to be in China during the moon festival. I'm going to quote to you from the Columbia Encyclopedia, some more research. This is on the subject of sin, S-I-N, and not the one that you're thinking of. Sin is the moon god of the Semitic peoples, worshipped in ancient Middle Eastern religions. It was one of the principal deities in the Babylonian and Assyrian pantheons. Sin was the lord of the calendar and of wisdom. The chief centers of his worship were at Haran and at Ur, where he was known as Nana, N-A-N-N-A. The 1911 Britannica says, same subject, Sin, S-I-N. The name of the moon god in Babylonia and Assyria, also known as Nanner, the Illuminer. The two chief seats of his worship were Ur in the south and Haran considerably to the north. But the cult at an early period spread to other centers, and temples to the moon god are found in all large cities in Babylonia and Assyria. And the article goes on. I'm not going to read it all. Somewhat technical. It mentions many points of geography to help one understand where it was from. So research tells us that people have been worshiping the moon and a moon festival, and there has been the god of the moon as part of the Eastern religions and Middle Eastern religions for a long time. So we come to point five. I want you to consider the truth of the matter about sun and moon worship by reading with me in Psalm chapter 8. It's a short psalm. Psalm chapter 8, all nine verses. O Lord, or our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth, you who set your glory above the heavens. Out of the mouths of babes and infants you have ordained strength because of your enemies, that you may silence the enemy and the avenger. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him? For you have made him a little lower than the angels, and you have crowned him with glory and honor. You have made him to have dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep, oxen, even the beasts of the field, the birds of the air and the fish of the sea, they that pass through the paths of the seas. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. So the heavens, the sun, the moon, the stars, were placed there by God. And so we find that the truth of the matter is that sun and moon worship are not biblical. There's something to the fact, certainly, that they're placed there by God. He is the great God. So now I come to point six, a concluding point. And I've titled this, Rethinking the Possibilities of Biblical History. I'm just considering that I can't prove some of these things.